there you have it. I think I probably speak for everyone in feeling both a lot of excitement and also maybe a sense of relief that we've got this over the line, right? Like when Callum was talking earlier about UTXO commitments being sort of discussed in 2013 and 2014, and it's only now in 2024 that we're maybe starting to actually take that kind of stuff seriously, it really puts in perspective how everyone can have the best of intentions or the best, you know, alignment or ideas or whatever, but it only takes a few things going wrong, a little social drift here or there, new people joining the community, censorship, propaganda, whatever it is, and before you know it, ideas that once seemed like they were a lock have faded out of sort of the view of the community, and maybe they never happened. So that's my initial reaction, maybe starting with Matthew. Talk to me about Abla.
Yeah, definitely agree with the initial reaction. So part of it is relief that it's finally resolved. I really liked the video, especially that it emphasized that hopefully no more manual intervention is needed with regards to the block size limit. Like, it's permanently, hopefully, like permanently solved. So yeah, that's really reassuring. And yeah, so very hyped that it's now live on the network. And I think everyone shares that sentiment.
Yeah, not only that it's a relief, but the whole process has been a relief. The difference between the way Bitcoin upgrades used to happen, both on BTC and then BCH, and now it's just night and day. How, from a kind of concern and risk and worry perspective, this was a complete non-issue. Like, nobody here was really worried about it happening. It was just kind of a celebration that it is happening, which is fantastic. And all of the discussion that happened on this and all the development and the research and everything happened, you know, long ago. And then there's, the process has just been fantastic to be able to see people working on it. And we're already talking about the next year and the next year. So I absolutely love it that that it's a relief here, and then just that the whole thing has become so smooth.
Yeah, so I'm really glad we finally got this through. If only we had this before 2017, we wouldn't even be here, right? We'd all be on our island with Bitcoin being like millions in value and still a medium of exchange. But yeah, we've got it through, and I think it really cements that BCH is ready now for becoming that world currency that we all know it will. And I have to say, Jeremy, this video is amazing. You know, I have to be honest, I saw it. It was on my to-watch list. I didn't get time before the conference. But it seems like you've done your TikTok research, right? Because you've got the words underneath, and it's like, yeah, you know, to keep up with it, which is very, I know TikTok does that. But it made me really focus in and like get the key points. And it was very short and concise. So I'd love to see more of these sort of videos to make it easy for everyone to understand like why this is important and what it is.
It was concise, and also like you really nailed all the important points. There's no little side points that we missed. It was great.
Both the considerations of it adapting too quickly or too slowly, like and or responding to raising the limit too fast or too slowly, that definitely, because those are the considerations that are technically relevant.
Yeah, and we had quite a lot of people who would then, even when you say that algorithm's in and it would change things, and people would say, okay, well, that sounds great and all, but even before they go and actually read up on the details, then they say, what if it's wrong? And you say, well, you know, like, firstly, maybe go read about it and learn, you know, what you're criticizing before you start criticizing it. But I think it is that key point that even if something is wrong with it, which hopefully won't be the case, but if the world's a fast-moving place, if things change, the fact that we can ship an upgrade like this just creates ongoing momentum that we can find consensus and agree to ship something different, right? Whether it is a change to Abla or it is something else. And it's funny you guys touch on having short, concise things that make a lot of sense, and it's easy for people to grasp because BCH has a lot of things that are quite nuanced and hard to explain in that way. And the chip process is one of them. I've had to do several explanations of that on my show and in media around the place. So I don't know if you guys have any suggestions. How do you think we can best, like people watching the live stream now, they don't know anything about the chip process. It's their first time finding out about BCH. How do you boil down that process and why it's effective?
I think one thing that can help is if people just find out now about Abla, that it didn't come fall out of the sky yesterday, so it was already activated for on chipnet in November normally. And even before it, yeah, there was already implementations and being talked about. It's probably being discussed on the research forum more than a year ago. So things actually move quite slowly in some respects, and it's good because it gives stability, and then everybody knows what's coming, or at least everybody involved in the community to some extent. So this predictability, I think, is a very important factor, and it's something key to the chip process, that important upgrades, which have inherently some risk, need to move slowly, or at least slow enough that everyone has the time to thoroughly review all the aspects and all the risks.
Yeah, the upgrade has been worked on for a long time, as you said, and a big aspect of the process, of there being a process, is, yeah, there's a process, and it's well-documented, and it's there, but as you said, it's been kind of hard to really convey what that means in detail, but also, as Mathieu said, you just show people the actual chips, and they look at it, and they say, oh, that's pretty easy to understand, and it's a pretty good representation. You know, each chip as a document is a good representation of, oh, wow, they had to do a lot to get through this, and a lot of people are involved in this, and it obviously went through several revisions and people coming up with problems and risks and things that they might need to handle or things that haven't been thought of. It's all there in the document. So just looking at the documents now that we've gone through the process of working through some of them is a great place to start.
Anish, any thoughts on the chip process?
Yeah, well, one thing for me I like with the chip process is how much consideration goes into these things. I can remember back a couple of years ago there was some in the community that were highly skeptical about the change in the development, you know, with a 1 year release schedule but this, you know, the way the chip process works, so there's lots of research gone into this, and then there's ChipNet, right? So this is pushed through in November, so there's a good 6 months to basically see, like, is this working as it's... We've done lots of research, we've been very careful, but still, you know, is it actually working as intended? And this is really critical because, you know, Bitcoin Cash has gone through, you know, several forks, and we've had now this period of stability, and this is critical for large companies, right? This, that the chips are well researched, that there's a slow period that is tested before it's pushed out to actually the market, because, you know, I know this from experience with larger companies, they're very itchy when it comes to making significant investments into an ecosystem when the development of that ecosystem is very like risky or gung-ho, which is why I respected very much what you were saying earlier, like go fast and break things is a brilliant entrepreneurial move, right? So don't misunderstand that, like, go fast and break things. But not on BCH, not with the contracts, and not anything that's on the main level. So I think the chip process is a great addition to what we have in a robust ecosystem.
Yeah, and one point I want to emphasize is its public nature. Like, if you, I follow the research forum like very actively. So if there's a new comment, I try to read up on it. But this public nature wasn't always the case, even in Bitcoin Cash. Like, there were some small rooms where things were discussed, or like kind of a backdoor agreements or discussions. But yeah, this is not a transparent way to evaluate network risks or new proposals. So to have a public forum which is really focused on research and technical arguments, so it's also moderated if something is not relevant to the technical discussion, to really keep the place like a good for technical discussion and a good environment to produce high quality outcomes, or at least high signal. So if you go there, yeah, the comments will all be very relevant critiques or questions about the topic or the chip being discussed. So yeah, it's very cool to be able to be part of the discussion. So anyone interested can later today read up on the different chips and the different arguments against and for them and the different risks. So that's a big positive aspect.
The site he's talking about, bitcoincashresearch.org, is the same one that I talked about in my presentation, right? There's a lot of good research and discussion going on there. So, get on there. There's a lot of different topics. There's consensus-level discussions. There's apps. There's protocols, all kinds of discussions that are good. And going back to the point that I said about the whole process has just become smooth of upgrades, when you go there, you'll see things that are in research or, you know, potential consensus upgrades, you know, nothing's decided, but potential upgrades for years ahead. which is fantastic. Like, all that stuff's out in the open, and for years it's being discussed. And, you know, if you want to build confidence yourself, or if you have a company that wants to go and check, are these guys really serious, you can point them at it, and they'll look and say, I have no idea what's going on here. Let me get an engineer to check. So there's, like, the engineering discussions, but then there's also business-level discussions of, does this make sense? Like, are there users for this? Is there actually demand for these things? So it's a... It's a broad spectrum of stuff going on there. It's great.
Well, it's a sign of maturity to think on longer time frames, and I've been very impressed that the community has started doing that more and more. I mean, you guys say that it is public and it's well documented, and that's true to a certain extent, don't get me wrong, but I think we can still do a lot of work to improve that, like the fact that we need to be here on this stage explaining that kind of stuff. Where can people go get involved? Like, I think one litmus test might be, like, by a show of hands here, who felt that they were really engaged with the ABLA upgrade and the discussion around it before kind of coming to this conference? Okay, a few. Wow. So yeah. You got maybe like 25-30% of the audience, I think, but it's a long way from, this is a room of, you know, fairly hardcore Bitcoin Cash supporters, from, you know, getting that to 70 or 80% maybe would be more realistic in the future. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, I do. So we always say, or I've said for many years, and other people also say, you know, can the devs do something? Is a coin, is a network about its engineers? No, it's absolutely not, right? It takes everyone. It takes all kinds of professions and skills and abilities to make things happen. And this is one of those opportunities where you were talking about the 1%. It might be a little bit more than 1%, but take your skills as a marketing person or as a communicator and look into the things on BitcoinCashResearch.org and let the world know about them, because engineers have many talents, but... you know, public communication is not usually at the top of the list for engineers. So yeah, have a look at it and see if there's some things that might be valuable to communicate to the world and even inside the community.
Yeah, so one thing that would be a luxury to have for the future, if it, like these high quality produced videos, they're very good to get people engaged and the attention, but with yeah, now the upgrade already activated, so it's kind of a celebration. But it's also good to have this information out in advance, like when it's being discussed, or at least when it's being activated on ChipNet, so people know far in advance that it's coming, and not only the hardcore, but like the wider community. So I feel on the communication front, maybe not between the technical community, but in the wider community or ecosystem, that yeah, there is some room for improvement. But yeah, this takes not just developers or engineers, this takes yeah, wider scope.
I think it could include everyone, right? Even if you're not an engineer that's involved in that part of it, even if you're not making content, it's just being mindful of it, right? Because everybody is involved in the BCH community. Everybody talks to other, you know, Bitcoin Cash members, or can be, you know, doing outreach or just casual conversations here and there. And it's a hard thing to sort of accurately measure, but that kind of, like, what do you call it? Like wisdom of the crowds, that kind of knowledge that everybody just takes for granted, takes time to build up, and it's an active process that we should be focused on. So I think, yeah, we can do better signaling those things ahead of time, both in terms of the quality to be more engaging, and also, yeah, over a longer period of time. So that's a topic I think also deserves attention, in that I've had people discuss with me and ask, like, okay, well, chip process is working now, but that's because the BCH community is small, right? When it's 5 times bigger, 10 times bigger, 100 times bigger, 1,000 times bigger, it's not going to work. Problems are going to come up. Now, that sort of remains to be seen. Actually, the burden is now on the doubters to prove that would happen, rather than us to defend, you know, something that's actually already working. But there's some merit to that argument, right? It's very easy to say at a small scale things are easier to manage and easier to align on with a large group of people, right? So do you have any thoughts on this? How do we maintain the momentum as the community grows?
Yeah, so one thought I have is that the yearly schedule is really healthy, I think, because it doesn't just get harder when you grow bigger. If I can use Ethereum again as an example, they're much bigger, like orders of magnitude, but they still do hard fork upgrade just fine. So I don't think like some BTC ossifiers will tell you that ossification is inevitable and we won't be able to change the protocol anymore. I don't believe at all that it's true. It's also a kind of cultural thing. So if we decide collectively that yearly upgrades is a good schedule and it works for us, then we can just do our thing and abide by our rules, and we don't need to mind the ossifiers who tell us what we can and cannot do.
There will be, I think, some element of ossification, right? That's just a natural thing. As things get older, the HTTP protocol, you can't really change it very much anymore, right? It's well ensconced all over the place. So, there will be some element of that, but there's no reason to artificially inject it into anything. Yeah, we just got to keep going. And the process is always open to change. It has a much higher bar to changing the chip process, but of course that can also change.
Yeah, and this is something like I agree very much with Matthew, looking at the near future, very much so like the yearly upgrade to cycle, I think is really great. What I think is, though, is it's not to underestimate. Right now, BCH is very small. You know, the whole crypto world is very tiny. And we will succeed on our goal to become a world currency. Like, that's going to happen. And think about, like, what does that mean? Businesses are running their entire infrastructures on BCH. So the idea of doing a hard fork every year, like, if at certain levels, maybe that's still going to be okay, but maybe not, like, because maybe there are going to be some changes that would just cause so many problems to all of the people that are relying on Bitcoin Cash, right, and using that backbone for really important things, right? This is money. I agree with John that like, some level of ossification is almost certain. Certainly certain, like, very low level, like, standards of Bitcoin Cash, which is why, like, the next sort of, you know, 5 to 10 years are really important, and we should be building that, which we're doing. That's why it's so fantastic. The Bitcoin Cash is a great product today. It's really super. But of course, there's lots of work being done to make it better, so that when it does start becoming this world currency, it's there. And so that if there is some level of ossification, which I guess is inevitable, say that's okay, because the product is ready for that.
Yeah, I think we are on a timeline just with either growth or inevitability of, yes, particularly hardware. Like, once there's more and more hardware, it gets harder and harder to change these kind of things. So on that topic then, if we're here in 2024, we've just shipped Abla, the most likely things for 2025, which have been mentioned a little bit throughout the conference, let's maybe have a chat about a couple of those and get a gauge of where you guys are at on them. So I think the first one is the VM limits, which Matthew was talking about most prominently. Do you want to just expand a bit more on, maybe from, obviously we already talked about it, but from the community point of view, how should people be thinking about it? Where can they go to get more engaged in it? Is it really risky? Things like that.
So definitely there would be risks with retargeting VM limits, because the limits are kind of a historic artifact from BTC, so they're totally not well designed, but they do prevent like a very bad worst case scenarios. Like, if there would be no limits, then they could happen very bad things, which would make it very expensive to validate blocks, and which would make the network less permissionless or less decentralized. So things we really want to prevent, but we can retarget. So this is important, and I want to emphasize this: retarget the VM limits in a way that that keeps that doesn't increase the worst case scenario. So the worst case scenario keeps as it is right now, but just the common use cases that normal smart contract developers use, they get also limited very strictly right now, whereas those shouldn't be limited to that extent. So we can retarget the VM limits to keep the worst case the same as it is now, but allow smart contract developers to use the basic functionality to a healthy level. And the proposal, I think, says 10,000 bytes for a contract, maximum contract size. So I would be very happy to see that, but I know that the proposal is still kind of in a draft mode, and we should see an update to the chip shortly. So I think in a week or a month, we will see an update with extensive testing. So all the worst case Because Jason Dresner does very thorough work. So we should have the worst case scenarios like publicly documented, and then you can just run the test and see that the worst case are the same. Like it doesn't get more expensive even with the retargeted limits. But the normal use cases for a smart contract, like adding two numbers, like that shouldn't be limited to 201 operations. So this limit will be lifted to 10,000 bytes.
Imagine.
Yeah. So he covered pretty much everything that's important, especially the last part. So I'm a very kind of risk-oriented kind of guy. You might be able to tell from the presentation that I did. But that last part is very critical from my perspective, right? Because everything that Mathieu said is absolutely true. Like, it's all of that is correct, and it's going to be a great thing to do. The only thing is, and it's very, very important, you really got to make sure not to break people's money. And so you have to be beyond careful that you've really considered every case, and you're not going to do something that, whoops, now we have inscriptions and we're writing 4 megabyte JPEGs onto the BCH blockchain with a discount, right? Like, you just got to make sure you don't do something like that or even close to that level of silliness. So yes, so this part that Jason is working on is great. And for example, anybody else who's out there and goes on bitcoincashresearch.org or looks at the chip and looks at the test vectors, is what it's going to be called, that Jason creates. If you go in there and you find something that he missed, you know, you can make a name for yourself. And that's part of the chip process. That's part of it all being out in public. You can go and look and say, well, yeah, this all looks completely legit. I can't think of any way that this could cause a worse problem than they've already described, and this worst case is fine. But if you can look at it and find something, you'll literally make a name for yourself and never have everybody's appreciation. So go take a look.
And this is an example, right, of going against what you said before, right? This is a case where you take that, try and break it. Try and break what's been done.
Oh, yeah, break it.
Move fast and try and break things.
And break everything.
All right, that might have to be our next thing. So in terms of like the timeline, like people can get the sense that we have this sort of 6 months from May until November for a proposal to be drafted and hashed out and sort of got into a good state. And if it's not quite ready, then perhaps it waits around the next year, and that gives it kind of an extra 12 months. How long has this VM limits stuff been in discussion? And are you optimistic or not that, you know, it's going to be solid enough by November that everyone's going to go for it?
I'm going to jump in first here. So I don't know how long it's been officially under. There's not been a chip because the chip process didn't exist at the time. Yeah. But since we first tried to write, since the first time anybody tried to write contracts back in 2018 when we got OpsCDSV, that's the first time that meaningful smart contracts became possible. Anybody who tried anything was thinking about it at that time because the box was tiny to work inside of. So yeah, just anybody who's been working on it knows that it needs to happen.
Yeah, like Roscoe mentioned in his presentation, just by doing the introspection in the hacky way you needed to do before, you were already at so much boilerplate, so many opcodes that the 201 limit, like every smart contract developer has run into it. So it was under discussion from when people started doing stuff with smart contracts. But I think this chip, almost a year, so there's definitely, it's not like people only started working on it when Abla got approved or something like that. It's these research overlap, and it's no reason to wait until one thing is completed until to start on the next one. It's also the people can be like the same, but also it can be different people or involved to different extents. So yeah, it's overlapping in timeline.
So if we knew that this was on the cards or people were interested in running into this problem in 2018, just to play devil's advocate, why haven't we seen more on that until now? Like, is it just because the community's only been able to, you know, had cash tokens, we had Abla, there's only so many dev resources to go around? Is that the cause of the delay? Or
I think I can do the initial answer and then pass the ball to John. The answer is that it's kind of... when you start doing these smart contracts, you ran into the limits. The easy way is just let's raise the limit. 201 opcodes. I think it should be 10,000 opcodes. But that's why we have to think about these worst cases, because having 10,000 opcodes would make the worst case terrible. Like you could do 10,000 signature checks, or just duplicate an element and concatenate it, so it would grow kind of like exponential in size. And you would have very large elements on the stack, which could cause memory problems for fill nodes. So I guess with this, do you have some thoughts on this?
Yeah, absolutely. So ironically, it's like somehow it's a little bit unexpected, but the hard thing, like doing things like introspection, these are these other technical upgrades that BCH did. Introspection, 64-bit integers, these are technically difficult things. They're not conceptually difficult, but doing them correctly and safely is difficult. But doing that was also more straightforward in some sense, to say that, look, okay, we could just increase things to 10,000 and YOLO and see what happens. But we know that we've got to improve the way things work. We absolutely knew that some things had to improve. So let's do some very minimal limit increases, and then let's increase the actual capability of the system, which will create more power actually earlier. Because creating big limits and then making everybody work with a very clunky virtual machine wouldn't actually get as far as doing things in reverse. So we got introspection, we got 64-bit integers, and then it actually became very powerful. And now you really want to do a lot of things with it because it became very powerful. Now it's a moment to say, okay, now we understand the power and we understand the limitations. This is a good time to really kind of set the limits of the system. So it was a little ironic that the hard thing was easier to do first.
I've just been thinking as we've been talking about this, sort of the quality of your language is the quality of your communication, right? And what I'm really noticing is, because what I'm trying to ask you, I mean, that's a great answer and all, but what I'm trying to ask you is like, what stage are we at now? But there are not words for those stages or like milestones that we can get through. There's very vaguely the lock in November, this go live in May. We need some better, like if you had to break things down a little bit in terms of a few steps, even within something getting to lock in, it gets proposed, it gets generally discussed, gets iterated. I don't know what Fiendish, how do you see the chip process evolving in an ideal way? And then maybe we need some names or a color, system or something.
The color system is quite nice, right? There's quite a lot of posts on Bitcoin Cash Research, and you could have like a color, like this is right, just a very early question. Like this is a chip, like I've had this idea. It's in the research phase, like people are starting to respond into it. It's in the pilot phase, like you're testing this out. And you're using a color for all of those, so that means you could even filter on the website to see, okay, which ones are pretty close. You know, they may be really in consideration for going on mainnet, so I can really look into that and start actually attacking that, trying to break it. So I think that's a great idea of just making it a little bit more approachable, because I guess, you know, you guys are looking at this daily, you're actively building on this, and so you know like most of the stuff or all of the stuff that's on there and what stage it's on, whereas for many developers and builders now that go on there, they'll be like, okay, like when's this going to be going out? Like what's the stage of this? And so that color process would allow them to focus on the ones that like, you need to check this now, because if you don't check it now, like the problem's going to be found out really soon.
Sounds like a job for someone who's good at visual communications and social media.
Someone else, eh?
How can you help? This is the question everyone should be asking.
There's a little bit of difficulty, right? Because this is one of the things that went into the discussions that led up to the chip process is you have to be careful because you set up like, okay, you know, red, yellow, green. Yeah. It starts to feel like a process where it's just going to happen, but it's not, right? The actual assumption for any proposal is that it's going to fall flat and just die. And that's a good thing, right? Because there's a lot of good ideas out there. So you have to
kind of so balance. No red, no green.
You have to balance that idea of giving people the suggestion or the ideas that this thing is inevitable just because it has a...
Yeah, so you can definitely envision that there's something in the, I don't know, the red stage or the yellow stage moving to orange and then back to yellow, because if there's, with the VM limits, with the tests, if we find issues, or any developer does, of worst cases that actually get really bad, even with the retargeted limits, yeah, then we need different limits. So then it gets bumped back more to research phase. So it's really...
Sounds like a regular project to me.
Yeah. Yeah, but this would be a good...
There's no linear progression throughout the stages, because right. Once someone finds any real critique or a real issue, then it just gets needs to be reevaluated sometimes from the start. Sometimes it's a small tweak. But you can start bumping colors like every weekend.
Yeah, but if somebody who's good at visualizing things, like this kind of slightly complex process, it's not a big deal, right? Somebody can find a good way to visualize this.
I think if it's not going to be sequential, you know, you can do it as like something irrelevant, like animals, you know.
There's
rabbit, deer, and cat or whatever, right? Or, I don't know.
Yeah, the stages of evolution, maybe. Like, this is pretty evolved, right? This
I'm trying to get away from that. I'm
nearly a human being. Dogs are the best end of the process.
So I think one good way to see how likely a proposal is to also make it is how long has it been an issue? Like, the block size, it was kind of clear that this hard-coded limit has been a big issue for a long time. Because dynamic block size was talked about for a long time, and then we saw with BTC how that plays out. But with the limits, it's kind of the same. These limits don't... Pretty much everyone is in consensus that these, the current way, are bad limits, and it needs to be re-engineered. But then the question becomes, what's the best proposal? And developers can only really even convince themselves that their proposal is the best once they've done all the work and all the tests, and once it's already pretty much finalized. And then if nobody else can poke holes in it, yeah, then it gets kind of accepted. But if someone can poke holes in it, yeah, then it's back to the stages before, like doing researching the other limits, tweaking, writing more tests, test vectors.
So a challenge, because I see this as a challenge, right? To somebody who is good at this kind of visualization and research and checking things out and communicating things. Another challenge is this thing that most people are not used to, which is there's no such thing as voting in this process, right? There's no parliament, there's no king, there's no top-down decision-making happening, and there's no distributed top-down decision-making happening, right? It's bottom-up decision-making. And that's a hard thing to communicate. So finding some way to put all these things together and visualize and show it, man, that'd be a great challenge. I'd love to see that realized between now and the next upgrade. I'd love it.
Yeah, but see, what I'm hearing is even just in explaining it, like, we all sort of have this vague sense, right? Like Matthew is saying, oh, well... You just kind of know it's been a problem for a long time. You know, the engineering part of my brain is, well, how long and who knew, right?
We got a presentation about UTXO commitments. So this was an idea discussed back in, I think, 2012 or something that Kalin mentioned. And we all know that the initial block downloads take a long time and it's only a problem that gets worse. So I mean, in a technical sense, the solution has been discussed for a long time and it's also known as a problem for a long time. But then finding a good solution... is where it's at, and you can really find a good solution if nobody can poke holes in it. So you need to give everyone involved in the process enough time to poke holes. So if you would give it a green sticker before anyone has taken the time to poke holes, then you might give it like the, or call it a deer, when it should tell us flaws that I can send it back to research phase. So that's just...
There you go, research phase. See, this is what I'm saying. Like the first thing you said there is... Everyone agrees it's a problem. Like that's sort of a phase. We just need a name for it. And then there's the phase of everybody can, it's public knowledge for a while. I feel like we need names for these different points.
Yeah. And then the bottom up part of it could be represented by, you know, like a little logo for, you know.
Yeah, well, maybe everybody can start flaring it on Twitter and Reddit and
everybody
Bitcoin
thinks
Cash
this
research.
Is on research phase, you know, puts their little logo there, and whoever thinks it's on, no, this is totally done already for production. Like, put their logo over there. Yeah,
yeah.
There's a lot of ways to do it.
That would be an excellent site, you know, Bitcoin Cash proposals or something with a timeline of them all, and yeah, if people can vote
this,
somehow,
this was
not
one of the
vote,
original.
But indicate their opinion.
Yeah, and this was one of the original ideas, because people have often, for years, said, you know, BCH needs a roadmap. And it's like, yes, that would be a really nice thing to have, but where is this source of truth for the roadmap? Who's asserting this? And this is the idea that has been said for a long time, but no one has done it, is to show, like, this is a decentralized roadmap. Mm. And I don't mean that in the fuzzy nonsense way. I mean, just like we were just discussing, you could literally go out, poll the people, the community, the ecosystem, and show these are what different people, these are the phases that different people think this proposal is in. And then if you put all that together, you end up with a roadmap if you're good at visualizing it, showing it.
I'm really excited by this. This sounds great. And I really like the research stage. For me, the research stage is quite simple. I think, like, I don't know, what, like, some kind of a solution stage. Like, you have something, you've architected something, like some proposal for a solution, and that's being vetted, it's being tested. Right? Because there's also quite clearly a stage where you get to where basically, okay, now I'm going out to find if there's consensus to actually put this proposed solution into the next upgrade. So there's clearly, like, there's a solution, there's something different now. Like, we're into the consensus stage or the proposal stage. And for me, there's, like, clear, like, definitely three stages there.
I'll give you one more at the bottom. It's the good idea stage.
The good idea stage?
Yeah, everything,
like, it's not a problem stage. Like, you got to start with that. I think that's what Matthew was saying.
I'm saying ironically, like, the good idea. Like, a lot of things start as they sound like good ideas, but they're not. Okay.
All right, you're like...
like fixing upgrade days.
Ooh.
Shots fired.
Yeah, okay, well, maybe that... because I think we already are doing that in a way. It's just not well visualized in the sense that, like, I put out tweets, you know, saying I support Abla, and I've, you know, do a sign off on that, and so do other people in the community, and the more people that do that, it kind of creates this emergent
consensus.
But
it's not very visible right now, for sure.
Yeah.
It's not easy to understand.
Yeah, I think we can do a lot better about that. Okay, so we talked about VM limits. Maybe let's talk a little bit about UTXO commitments. Obviously, Callum was talking about that today. I think that's another one that's kind of, you know, potentially in the cards for 2025 or 2026. Everybody agrees it's a problem. The right way to do it, not yet determined. So there's more research needed, but give me your thoughts on that, as, you know, people have been following this a long time.
Yeah, it's one of the critical steps to scaling. And it's one of the great things about BCH. It's the practical Bitcoin. We make things happen. And we know that scaling is not just one number. It's not just one system. You know, it's, you have to actually make a system that works for the world, for literally billions of people. And anybody who thinks that's going to be just a super straightforward process, that's nonsense. But this is one of those things that we know has to be done. So, yeah, let's get it done. And it's already been in research, and people are already working on it. It's fantastic, yeah. And there's going to be more things that have to be done, not only on nodes, right, with indexers and block explorers and all kinds of wallets, etc. All this different things need to happen for scaling. But I think this is just one of those, one more step that we have to take on that road to billions of people.
And that's what I love about the Bitcoin Cash community as well. I think many people outside of the community think that, like, Bitcoin Cash is just about on-chain scaling, and then and as it currently is, and that's it, which is obviously not true. And I love the approach taken. You know, I think to paraphrase Callum is that you may not like some of these things. It may not fit, like, the ideal situation in your mind, but, like, we have to be considering this. We have to look at this because we have to be realistic. You know, there are real needs when the chain size gets so large. And what I really loved is also just the approach that it's like, this is high risk, right? You know, being quite honest and open about that. But we need to discuss this, and we need to have this conversation. And that's something I think you won't see in certain other chains. And I love that. That's a great aspect of Bitcoin Cash, is being the pragmatic chain. The optimal chain is basically looking for the best solution for actually the real world, you know, being monetary system for the entire world, not just for a small group of people, or not just for a dream, a fantasy.
Yeah, so for the UTXO commitments, I'm very happy to see, like, a progress update. Yeah, so how far it's come, and that it's being presented on and these different solutions, because even for me, maybe I haven't followed it closely, but I know that there was different proposals for U3XO and Merkle trees, and that you could do inclusion proofs, but these has scaling limitations, and of course in BCH we're very wary of anything that could introduce scaling limitations, because of course for now it would be fine, but yeah, we would have to switch it when we actually get success and actually get many users. So it was cool to see that these different solutions have different trade-offs, and that there's actually a scalable way to do this. So I was very glad to get the presentation and the new info today.
All right, I think those are the two things that are most heavily under discussion, and they already organically came up in Bliss, so I was quite happy to see that. Let me change track a little bit. One thing the community, in a similar sense to the chip process with coordination, is we also have to coordinate resources, right? And we've had Flipstarter, we've had a long period of both, you know, successes and failures with allocating money that way, people doing donations, you know, it's amenable to a crowdfunded community-based thing like Bitcoin Cash to have that a lot, but there's been some good and some bad that's come out of that. So what can we learn from the lessons that we've had on funding and bootstrapping new economically viable projects in the scene?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the very first thing that there needs to be is accountability. I think this is one of the things that has been, you know, missing. With Flipstarter, it's been fantastic for raising money for developers, you know, that are known in the community for doing their particular thing to improve the protocol, and that's been highly successful, right? When looking at it from the marketing perspective, the awareness perspective, it's been a little bit of a shit show, I'd say, to be quite frank. And I think the large part of that is because of accountability, because a Flipstarter's run, you know, it's put onto some server somewhere, and maybe a few weeks later, that's no longer accessible. And people quickly forget, right? We all have short memories, and so that particular person or similar people, then, you know, they come up 6 months later and do the same thing again. And this happened, right, for a while there. It was a little bit concerning. A lot of money was wasted. So I think I've known some of you are creating some great projects to do that, is to increase the accountability of such projects so that people can track it and be like, oh, hey, yeah, you did a great job. I want to invest into you next time. Or you did a really bad job, or you just ran off with that money. I'm not going to invest into you. So that's what I'd love to see.
I can give some specific advice, because I've thought about this and talked about it a lot with people, is if you're making a campaign, if you want to do something that you think is a public good, or whatever reason you think it's going to be successful, a Flipstarter or something, some kind of donation model, whatever it is, do your homework first. Talk with people you trust. Ask them what they think. And don't predicate the discussion on, you know, I'm launching this tomorrow, what do you think? Because that's a worthless discussion. Right? Okay, if we're launching it tomorrow, it's done already, so just do it. So take your time, come up with a good plan, and get real feedback, and expect people to say your plan sucks, right? Because most plans suck when they first start. You make a business plan or whatever it is, and it's going to be trash, and that's okay. You know, start and iterate on it, work on it. And as on the flip side, so do that as a campaigner. And on the flip side, if you're thinking of supporting a campaign, don't fall into the trap of thinking like, oh my God, I can't say anything bad about it. I don't want to criticize it, because then it might not happen or whatever. Like, no, you have to be honest, and you have to really think, is this the project that I trust? Is this something good enough? Is this, you know, up to my standards, and I want to spend my money on this to make this successful, or is this going to be successful? So if you have feedback and you think the proposal is okay or trash or whatever, great, let them know. And don't be afraid to just say, look, you need to redo this, like start over and make another presentation or another proposal. So the two sides, be iterate when you're making it, and then on the other side, don't be afraid to say, look, you've got to do a better one.
Yeah, I just want to add something to that, which is that I know personally that I've done this, is that can be public, but it doesn't have to be. You know, if somebody puts up a Flipstarter, almost certainly, like, they should have their contact details there for feedback and iteration and stuff. And you can just reach out to them privately and just say, look, I'm not so sure about this for X, Y, and Z reasons, or I think the idea is good, or I love the enthusiasm, but there's these problems that is why I wouldn't fund it. And then it's kind of up to that person to take that on board without their ego getting in the way or whatever, and then shipping a new version. And if you see somebody actually responsive in that way, that's already a good indicator that that's maybe somebody you should be investing in the first place when it actually comes to funding it. So it doesn't need to be some big public roast or anything. You can do it quietly, and then if they aren't responsive to that, then maybe you can ramp it up. You know, if they keep pushing it or they get a lot of other donations and you want to like sound the alarm bells, you can say, look, hey guys, I talked to so and so 3 weeks ago or 2 months ago, and I told them there was these problems. They didn't get back to me. They didn't address it. If you've already contributed, maybe consider, you know, pulling your funding until they're more like responsive, right? So that's not to create drama or anything, but if we're going to better allocate the money, it has to be, you know, it has to have some kind of accountability like that even before things get funded. Matthew, you get in here on this topic.
Yeah, so I feel, as I said in my presentation, that for the Cash Tokens ecosystem, so over the last year, that Flipstarter has worked really well. I think it's because there was just a lot of infrastructure that needed funding, and it was more of the technical kind, and there was enough builders like with a known reputation who wanted to step up. So I think, yeah, the way money was allocated with Flipstarter for the Cash Tokens ecosystem, I'm very happy with that. So that's more recently. Even one example is Salim Code, who's a great developer. I think he's in a third world country, and he was trying to build a block explorer for Cash Tokens, so with all the metadata. And so I was a huge fan, because if you want to build Cash Tokens project, then of course you need the block explorer, which shows the token icon and some information about maybe the NFT or just a specific metadata for everything involving Cash Tokens. And I know that it was actually not too easy for him to get money, because some people said, oh, why doesn't he collaborate with some existing project? Why doesn't he start yet another block explorer? But I think to this day, it's only one of three or one of two block explorers that support Cash Tokens in a good way. So I'm very glad that eventually he did get the funding, and I also try to endorse him and help him. So I feel that it was not too easy, but maybe before Cash Tokens, or more than a year ago, that some efforts, maybe there was too much willingness to fund and too few people taking initiative. So we did see things getting funded, which probably shouldn't have. If there was enough information, or maybe just like marketing efforts where the payoff is kind of intangible, and it's hard to measure, like, did the person really put the effort in and did he deliver? Whereas with some technical things, if developers promise a certain product or features, and oftentimes they're involved with this project anyway or with this topic, then I feel it's more concrete. So maybe Flipstarter is a better tool for funding certain technical things and more of a risky tool when doing kind of marketing initiatives. Because Flipstarter doesn't have to be the only way that we fund public goods. Like because it's funding everything upfront in advance. You in Ethereum see something called Gitcoin grants, which does retroactive public good funding. And I think this is a very interesting concept to also explore in Bitcoin Cash. So of course you need the whole infrastructure again, and it wasn't cheap at all to build the Flipstarter infrastructure, so I know it took a lot of work from people. So I'm very grateful that we have one good solution, but maybe the solution isn't universal, if not for every type of public good. So retroactive would certainly have different trade-offs, because people need to put in the work first. For example, they first need to do the actual marketing stuff and put in the effort, and then people can acknowledge it after the fact and say, yeah, obviously this person did a ton of work. Of course, if he does it full-time, he cannot do it for free. He needs to pay for expenses and live comfortably. So then retroactively, people can, for example, do some kind of voting. And I think for some projects, this might be the better funding structure, where if you give all the money upfront, then you can have people run away with the project, or just say, oh yeah, I promised to make videos and I made some videos. It's totally different expectations than the people who had when they funded the marketing Flipstarter and they thought it would be a very big thing. Whereas retroactively, it's obvious who put in the effort. So, of course, this also had some difficulties. If people want to build something where they need money upfront, then retroactively funding them doesn't help because the project would never get off the ground in the first place. So, just thinking about different solutions for the future and then also looking back at what has worked well. And I think for cash tokens recently, I'm incredibly grateful that we have Flipstarter.
Well, it's funny you say that because, like you say, Flipstarter doesn't have to be the only way, but it can be sort of a contributing way in that if you go about it where you think, I'm going to run a Flipstarter and I first need to demonstrate some proof of work, whether the Flipstarter comes together or not, it can get you some recognition if you have a solid enough proof of work section in there, and the community will then come to you and find you. I think people who have put in good work will even if you've done nothing and you just go to the effort to write a solid Flipstarter proposal and you have a place to contact you, people will reach out to you, and there are other ways that money distributes itself in the ecosystem, right? So I think people should be very aware that public proof of work can build credibility to get funding, even if the funding doesn't arrive in the exact way that they were expecting. I don't know if you want to add on to that, Mergent.
Sounds like a great app and smart contract that somebody should develop by the time we get here next year.
Yeah, and also, I think Flipstarter is the best for public goods, meaning things that can't really be monetized. For example, wallets are notoriously hard to monetize, so you could integrate some kind of exchange feature. But yeah, if you're a BCH-only wallet, then it's already harder, or you would have to customly integrate. Maybe, yeah, you could maybe integrate Caldwell now, but then you need enough volume and you need to attach a fee. So why would not people just use Wallet Connect? So there you don't really have a good business model. I think it's very good that we have funding models for public goods, but not everything is a public good in the economic sense. So some things you can easily exclude people. And then you can make a business model. You can, for example, NFTs are, you don't need a Flipstarter for an NFT mint, right? Because people can just earn through the NFTs. Or we might see more ICOs. Like cash tokens enables a ton of new also fundraising mechanisms. And I don't think there should be over-reliance on funding for public goods only if it fits this category, like public goods. For example, block explorers are also infrastructure. Like, how can a block explorer make money? Yeah. Whereas if you have tokens or anything, if you have a service, a product, yeah, then you can monetize this. But if it's just a stats website, interface where people can browse around, it takes developer time to develop it once, and then just small maintenance cost to keep it running. So this is, yeah, different in kind.
All right, let's change topic. This is a hard one. So Roger's in jail right now. The Samurai Wallet guys, they got picked up this morning. Tornado Cash lost in the Netherlands because the judge ruled that even though they were writing free and open source software and they didn't necessarily do anything wrong, that they sort of had it in their mind that it could somehow potentially be used for, you know, criminal activity or whatever. We're coming into a scary world, especially for, well, I guess, you know, not necessarily just open source devs, but they're high on the hit list for activities that 10 or 15 years ago would be just well beyond the pale of like being subject to law enforcement. But the advent of cryptocurrency and the threats to the existing system has triggered that kind of immune response. So it's a hard one, but what does the BCH community need to be doing in light of that? I mean, we're here, we're the good guys, but we can't just blindly march forward and get kind of gunned down one by one, right?
Yeah, one by one, right? This is the important thing. So I'm a big believer that everyone that's actively involved in cryptocurrency has some element of risk, right? But not doing anything at all, not pushing for that future, is also risky. So you have to be involved if you want to stop that future. There's risk either way. But we should try to collectively not let anyone go too far forward. Like, we should be moving forward together. And I think that we should be proactive with that. I believe very fundamentally that cash fusion is an invaluable tool for Bitcoin Cash. I think if we were to lose that, it would be a great shame, right? It would be a hit into the ecosystem. And at the moment, that is running on, you know, it's running on a server, and that server's tied to a particular person, and that concerns me. Like, I think that, you know, we should be proactive on that and look, how can we protect that person? How can we protect that server? How can we make sure that that service is running in a way that it's not tied to a particular person? Because, you know, I don't want anyone to go to jail. I certainly don't want Roger to be in jail or anyone else. I want to protect everyone in the community. But I want to make sure that those services are running, right? Because if that server is shut down, that's also not a good solution. So, you know, I guess that would be my way. So, you know, two things, you know, putting it behind door, putting it, you know, hidden, looking at other ways, P2P, for example, if that's possible. But at the moment, they've only gone for services where someone's accepted money. But I really think this is a technicality. Like, you know, it's just data. And whether you're accepting money for data, it's just zeros and ones or not. Like, really, the crux of the problem, what they're unhappy about is people are money laundering, right? You're transferring money and no one really knows where it's coming and where it's going. That's the whole point of crypto. And that's exactly what our services are doing. So I think we shouldn't be complacent here. So devs, do something.
Yeah, so first of all, I feel the community sentiment, like how many people here have a free Roger t-shirts, but then also, yeah, I see some hands. Then today there were multiple discussions about the case in the Netherlands where the developer actually, the Tornado Cash developer, actually got sentenced. So many people, yeah, it's a real thing that's on people's minds. And now also it's just injustice. So first of all, just on the privacy topic, like they used to outlaw things like encryption, and now like HTTPS is required and used by all government websites. I wouldn't be surprised if in the future some part of your ID or passport would be using ZK technology. But now if you do like a privacy tech, this is criminalized. It doesn't make much sense. So it seems that they want to criminalize making privacy protocols on transparent chains, whereas you can just use Zcash or ZK rollup. So they will always be like a zero knowledge privacy tech, and this is advancing very rapidly. So maybe this is a movement in the cryptocurrency industry of how we approach privacy protocols on top of a transparent chain versus just privacy layer twos. Yeah, so that's one thought. But then, of course, this doesn't help at all the people who have currently been arrested or who are currently maintaining privacy protocols. So I think, yeah, as a community, as a cryptocurrency industry, we need to try to make take a bold stand and speak in one voice that it's not acceptable, that these rulings don't make any sense, that it's injustice, yeah, and that we don't approve of this at all.
Yeah. You got to do the right thing. So, but on the point that Fiendish brought up, I got a couple of points to make. Like he said, doing nothing is its own risk. And I think a lot of us understand that at a pretty visceral level, right? Like, there's a reason we're here working on Bitcoin Cash. Part of it is, you know, the financial reward of being right and being early. Like, of course, that's part of it. But that absolutely is not enough to bring all these people here and all the people building on Bitcoin Cash together. Like, that would not be anywhere near enough. So we all have that feeling that something needs to be done, and it's very dangerous if we do nothing, because we actually have a chance to kind of head off this CBDC threat. And it really is a threat to just all kinds of parts of society. So something needs to be done. A lot of us are doing something there. Doing nothing is a huge risk because if you don't decide how the future is going to look, somebody else is going to decide how the future is going to look, and you may not like it. So that's there. But then at the same time, everybody has their own levels of risk. You know, you have a family, you have kids, you're single, or you live in a certain country or another place. Everybody has a different kind of risk profile. So think about it seriously. It's something you have to think about and make sure that you're doing something that's in line with all those factors, those things that make sense. And the last thing I was going to say is this is another place, right? Because I always bring up it's not devs, right? Bitcoin Cash is a whole organization and ecosystem, decentralized organization. At this point, people might need legal advice. If you are a lawyer or you know lawyers in various places, different countries or jurisdictions, whatever, you know, bring them in. Like, see if they can get people some help. Like, do some advising for people. That's something that I haven't seen going on. So, yeah, there's all kinds of talents and skills needed to make this whole thing successful. And like Fiendish said, you know, everybody moving ahead roughly at the same speed and at the same place, that's a much more powerful thing than you know, one guy running out and getting arrested. So, yeah, if you know somebody who has that kind of skills and professional, bring them in. See if they can help some people out.
Okay, we'll wrap it up soon, but I, you know, it's been a big couple of days, but I've got one more topic that I wanted to touch on. I don't know that it's productive really to get too much into what is going on in the rest of the crypto industry. Obviously, we're here for Bitcoin Cash. We've got our own game plan, and in certain ways, we are starting to lead the industry, right? So there's not necessarily anything that we can look to for inspiration, right? But I've been, and on the same topic of privacy, you know, that does need to be an industry-wide sort of defense. You know, we're not uniquely under the hammer in that regards. But I was very interested that throughout the conference, one of the themes that I really heard come up was essentially having the capability and the DeFi stuff from Ethereum, but with the scalability and the long-running, you know, time-tested model of Bitcoin, right, which was the original Bitcoin plan until the whole branding got subverted and so on and so forth. So we haven't really invented anything new there, but it is what the community is still thinking about and still attacking. And one thing I also noticed was that the Ethereum community was brought up semi-regularly as a model for what could we do to kind of get where they are in that regards, and much less BTC or much less any other coin. You know, there was very little mention. We talked about stable coins a little bit, but there wasn't much about USDT or any of these other coins. Where do we sit in the broader crypto industry as of this moment, and what should we expect from that going forward?
So I still follow BTC, for example, pretty closely, because now there's some discussion about them also taking a look at re-enabling opcat, like we did 7 years ago or something, or eight, or introducing some kinds of covenants, but then there's a lot of opposition there to these ideas. Then they have the BitVM ID, which sparked some kind of a new wave of layer twos for them, but the BitVM ID doesn't really seem practical at all, or it's not usable right now at least. But some interesting ideas that they have, at least in my opinion, is around, they also look at Ethereum. So they see Ethereum is doing optimistic rollups and ZK rollups, so these innovative ways to do layer twos in the most trustless way. And so, I think there are some cool ideas in that aspect, just that Bitcoin is now also looking at Ethereum. So there you can see who's kind of in the lead with innovation and just with general, who has the more mind share, I feel.
The one thing, or one of many things that's unique about BCH, is just the real laser focus on what it is we're trying to accomplish. Fiendish laid it out pretty well, right? Money for the world, money for everybody. It's got to be permissionless. It's got to be trustless. It's got to scale. It's got to be affordable for everybody to use. That laser focus doesn't really exist in most, or I'm not aware of any other crypto ecosystems.
Maybe where
that
Monero
really exists. Monero also has that very tight focus. I'd say BCH and Monero are pretty close cousins in this relationship, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, both of them moving ahead. And there's something to that, you know, if you know where you're going, you might get there. If you don't, you're going to get somewhere, but who knows where you're going to get to, right? So I think that's one of the things that sets BCH apart, and one of the reasons that I like working on it is because we know where we're going and we have a real purpose. Yep. And it's way out there, and it's going to take a while to get there, but we know what it is that's got to be done, and that keeps things from kind of degenerating into all kinds of nonsense. So that's one of the things that sets us apart.
And that's an important part why we must remain aligned. Like, we do our different things, but decentralized does not mean non-aligned. And if anyone's from Monero is watching this online or, you know, tunes in or checks us out, like, there is definitely a place for both BCH and Monero. I really, really believe this. I see sometimes online that there's some, you know, like, competition there. It's like, no, stop. Like, we are definitely on the same team. I'm going to look at this from a different, or answer this question from a slightly different perspective. It's just like taking a step out of the crypto world. I spend a lot of time with normies, right? Then, you know, these aren't developers. These aren't people that are in the cryptocurrency world. And I definitely feel when speaking to them that there is just overall less interest in crypto right now. When I'm thinking about the same time after the halving last time, I think, you know, a lot of the hype is gone. It's half the reason why when Bitcoin, the price rose quite quickly, I was just looking online and was like, okay, I'm getting rid of this. I'm really nervous right now. This is not okay. And just doubled down on BCH because, as you say, John, like, it's laser focused. Because what I think is, like, and I think this is also the case of Ethereum. I know it still has a huge amount of value locked on the chain, but just looking at the actual general people and the next billion users, I don't think that crypto is at a very interesting place. Or it was more interesting 4 years ago for them. Like, it's sort of in a fizzling out phase. Like, where's actually the value on this? Where's the real products? You know, there's a person at the back of the room, a very shadowy guy there who said this, like, you know, where's the products with value? And that's, I think the question comes from more for the average, like, user that's not already in crypto. And that's why I'm also really excited by Bitcoin Cash, because it is laser focused. And there's been this smoke here and there, because here, and people have been like going over there and over here. And when looking online, especially in the crypto communities, like, people are sort of going like, okay, why are we here? Like, what's the reason? Is it really just to make more fiat? They're asking that question, and they're starting to actually look, where's the real value? And what I love is that there's this little beacon of light amongst all of this smoke and debris, and that is Bitcoin Cash. And I think that as we continue building out that network, more of the more important, like, the next billion users will be much more excited about that than anything that's come before.
Yeah, I think just to touch on that I really can see that the BCH community is sort of rising in clout in the broader crypto sphere. And for a long time, we've been a bit off the radar, a bit ignored, a bit disregarded, right?
A bit
attacked. Okay.
Like, the understatement of the year.
But anyway, that worm is starting to turn, right? And now the community is going to be in a place where people are going to be tuning into these streams. They're going to be watching, what are the BCH guys up to? You know, do we need to copy them? Are they going to be, you know, flipping us on the coin market cap and upsetting us, or, you know, whatever? They're not being as reactive anymore. Do you have any thoughts for the community on how we can best manage that increasing relevance, right? Because a lot of the stuff you can get away with when you're small and nobody cares, if you're, you know, lazy here and there, or you got a poor attitude or whatever, then it just is by the by, right? But as your visibility grows, so too does the responsibility to live up to a high standard, right?
It's, you know, when you're the underdog, you can kind of do whatever you want, but we know where we're going. At some point, it probably won't be super clear exactly when it happens, but we'll be the most relevant network in the room. So just on the way there, might as well start early. Be magnanimous, you know. Don't get in fights with people too much. Don't punch down. You know, when it's obvious you're punching down, don't do it. When you're not sure, don't do it. Unless you have a really good troll, then maybe sometimes.
Top tier memes are okay.
Top tier memes only. You
know, no essays. Yeah.
Yeah, but just you know, be professional. But at the same time, you know, we're a decentralized organization, so everybody's going to do their own thing. And if you have an idea, if you have a business, if you're an entrepreneur, keep building it. If you're trying to help in some way, just keep doing your thing. And there's going to be eyes on you at some point, and that's good.
Yeah, and I'm sure everyone like follows the trends also. So if there comes a trend up in Bitcoin Cash that we don't really like or some people oppose, I'm sure they will be vocal. So with Cash tokens, we'll see a lot more experimentation. But yeah, if there's trends we don't generally like as a community or as bad side effects or whatever, then I'm sure it will be discussed and that everyone keeps a critical eye to what's happening.
Like our resident cat has said several times, you know, get chipping. If you've got an idea that you think is important, then go for it.
Another meme.
There's right. An answer.
The meme was. This is.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up here. So I'll give you one last chance for any final thoughts about any of those topics we've covered or anything else you think the community needs to. You know, I was doing a message to the community on my show. Here's a chance for that. Matthew, you're first up.
Yeah, so in my mind is still the recent news about the sentencing, the 5-year sentencing of the Tornado Cash developer. So yeah, I hope we can stand as one behind developers not getting arrested. So and also to Roger Ver with all the free Roger Ver. So hopefully he will be released soon from jail, because yeah, they really should just have sent them a letter if it's about a 10-year-old texting, which he agreed to with his lawyer. So it's really injustice. So that's where I want to end on.
Imagine.
Yeah, if you remember Matthew's presentation, it was one of my favorite slides of the conference. It showed what has happened in the last year. I totally love that framing. Just in 1 year. And there's this big box with all these different logos of projects and businesses and wallets and so forth that have happened. I would just say to you, try to be on that one next time. Try to be on that slide next time and make it, you know, 10 times bigger. So make your way onto that list.
Great. Yeah, so thanks for joining us at this amazing conference. What I'd love to say is good things come to those who wait. Stay patient and keep laser focused. Bitcoin Cash will become a world currency. And, you know, it just requires everyone to stay focused. And as I said earlier, be awesome people, be ambassadors to BCH, and let's make this future a reality.
All right.
Thank you all.
Cheers.
Thank you.
All right, I've just got some final notes to finish on, and then that'll be the end of Bliss. So one more shout out to all our sponsors, BCH Bull and General Protocols, Ryan Giffen's Commercial Kitchen Stop and Restaurant Ravish Off Ocean, Bitcoin Cash Podcast, Mike Komoransky, Molecular, Turek, Mini Satoshi, and of course Cash and I, Zapit, Paytaka, Electron Cash and TapSwap for helping us out with you know, the NFT sales and all of that stuff. Everybody who's watching online, I hope you've enjoyed it. And a few people have asked me, are we going to do this again? And I'm not going to commit to anything. But what I will say is when we were organizing this event, there was a period there where Jonathan said to me, oh, you know, we've been organizing this. This is good. I'm really looking forward to it. But it's a lot. So, you know, I don't know about if we'll do it again. But then as it got closer and closer, the hype started building and people started getting more interested and things sort of became... So when we're doing this next year, we'll X, Y, or Z, right? So... you know, maybe we can keep pushing that vote in the right direction. For the sponsors, we're going to be having a dinner in the hotel shortly. I'm sure you know about that. For anybody with a builder ticket, we have a social event tonight. It's just here in this room at 7 o'clock, so you have time to go off and get dinner and hang out. It's going to be fairly low key. I know everybody's had a big few days. That'll do it. Thank you, and good night for everyone on the live stream. This is BCH Bliss.